The No Better Than Average podcast is a proud member of the Geek News Central Network. Like No Better Than Average? Check out the other great shows on the network, such as The Elder Divide, The Gadget Professor, Geek News Central, Health Tech Weekly, and The New Media Show. You can find our show and all the great shows through our website, nobettershow.com, or at geeknewscentral.com. If it's geek, we've got it. Jacob and I both know we have the most awesome fans on the whole internet. And awesome fans join the Know Better newsletter. It's free, it's fast, and we promise we won't abuse your info. Much. Plus, you'll get the latest inside info on the show, drawings and giveaways, and cool announcements. Join today at nobettershow.com/join.
Hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, unapologetically mediocre studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazale and Jeff Janey.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. This is kind of a unique episode. I'm calling it our science episode. Sci-episode? I don't know how I want to say this. Sci-episode. I like science-episode the best, I think.
Science-episode?
Science-episode.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that.
Because we are going to talk about crazy nutty science stuff. And by crazy nutty, I mean completely common, rational science stuff. It just seemed like we had kind of built up a whole bunch of science stories. And I thought, why not just have a science-palooza? So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. We can pretend like we know stuff and things.
That's right. And that other person that you are hearing talk and who will later be pontificating and saying profound things is my co-host, Jeff. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really, really good. I went to see a movie today with my daughter.
Oh,
I'll give you a hint. I'll give you a hint what it is. I'm going to hold up three fingers and then...
Wait, is Lassie down a well? No, it was my three sons that had the whistling.
Andy Griffith. So my daughter's been bugging me. She wants to go see Mockingjay Part 2. So every time I have been coming into the room with her, I hold my three fingers up and then whistle something that's not Mockingjay. That was Harry Potter, by the way. And or I'll do Star Wars or just that's not it.
Anyway. I didn't even know that the newest part was, I guess I had kind of in the periphery been seeing the commercials for it, but I didn't realize it was out already.
I assume it made all the money because
I think the last one made all the money and this is just a continuation, right? It's like we have too much movie for one movie.
Yeah, basically. It was kind of like the last Harry Potter movie. They took the last one and split it into two.
Hunger Games Part 3, Part 2, The Quest for More Money.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
It says part two creeps over $100 million for a first place finish. So
that doesn't sound like a record, though.
For the first, just not really, not for the first weekend.
I mean, $100 million? I would have guessed a lot more.
$101 million becomes the fifth 2015 release to open above the $100 million mark.
Wow.
It's hard to call a film that opens north of $100 million a flop because it's not, but disappointing would not be a far stretch. So yeah, I guess it's not doing as well as they had hoped.
Interestingly, this past summer's Jurassic World is the number one highest opening weekend grosser.
Isn't that sweet?
$208.8 million.
Okay, so just to put this in perspective, in pre-sales alone...
Star Wars has already sold $1 billion.
Star Wars has already sold 75 million tickets.
Wow.
So if you figure $10, that's $750 million in pre-sales that they've sold.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, nobody expected it not to be
It doesn't
huge.
Matter. It doesn't matter what any movie did this year, because the number one movie this year, my friends.
Which hasn't even come out yet,
already is Star Wars.
So did you pre-order your tickets, Jeff?
I did not. I decided that I could wait. And actually, they weren't selling pre-orders for the theater here in Franklin.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Really. So I may just go see it here. I mean, even here, you know, this movie, there was plenty of seats and no big deal. So, you know, Franklin's a small town. And,
you know, despite my absolute best efforts, I still have not forced myself to go and see The Martian yet. So I am so far behind. It's been a while.
When they don't make any more good science movies, it's solely on your shoulders. It's 100% your fault.
You know, it's not the first time that I have heard stuff like that.
It won't be the last either. You're married now.
That's right. Hey, everybody, if you have a comment, a question, you want to give us a call, let us know what you think. Tell us we're great. Tell us we're awful. Whatever. Please feel free to do that at our call-in comment line. And that number is, as always, 317-643-1212. And hey, if you haven't joined yet, we have a newsletter. We are promising not to spam you, bombard you, sell your information. But if you want to keep up with all kinds of latest breaking information on the show, you just aren't getting enough of us in your ears every week, and you want us in your email box too, want to get information on possible drawings that we might be doing in the future, we would love for you to subscribe to our newsletter. And you can do that at our website, nobettershow.com/join. And like I said, we promise not to abuse you. We will not flood you with emails, and we will not sell your information. And if you want to support the show, that would be awesome. You can go over to Patreon and kick us a couple of bucks. We would accept whatever you want to give to kind of show your appreciation for the show that we are doing. And you can do that at patreon.com/nobettershow. And that is patreon.com. So just want to get into some quickies, some science quickies, but there is a podcast that I believe I have mentioned before because I absolutely love it, and I am jealous that these guys thought of it, and they do such a good job of it, and I am not. And it is called the Caustic Soda Podcast, and they just had a great episode. It's I want to say it's maybe their second to last most recent episode. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but it is titled Science Denial, and in it they talk about what science denial is, examples, why people tend to gravitate towards it. It's really a really interesting episode. And the thing that I thought was interesting is that people who are science deniers tend to be bulk science deniers. That is, you might believe in vaccinations causing autism and that global warming is a complete hoax perpetrated by those nasty evil scientists and all kinds of other things. And you tend to believe multiple types of science denial, except for the flat earthers. And yes, there are people out there that still believe in a flat earth. And other than the fact that they believe that the earth is flat, they are completely okay with physics and chemistry and just about every other type of science. So I thought that was really interesting. But the guys are hilarious. I highly recommend you check it out once you're done listening to this fine podcast. I can't talk today. Once you're done listening to this fine podcast, go check out the Caustic Soda. I just saw one that kind of boggled my mind a little bit, but there is a new controversial theory that suggests the speed of light is slower than we think it is. A study conducted by the physicist James Franson was looking at a supernova called SN 1987A, which coincidentally happened in 1987. So I guess they've been analyzing this data for a long, long time now. But anyway, the light particles from that supernova arrived 4.7 hours later than they expected them to. The star's collapse, which was seen in 1987, triggered a burst of neutrinos. That's what happens when stars collapse. And according to Einstein, that should have happened roughly 3 hours before the optical light hit the Earth. And from that moment on, so once they detected the neutrinos, the clock started. And they were looking for the light, looking for the light. And the optical light didn't arrive for 7.7 hours. So it was like 4.7 hours later than they were expecting. So Franson's theory believes that that delay could have been known by something called vacuum polarization, which sounds like a problem that you have with your Hoover. I don't know, you know, a science term. But in it, he postulates that the photons break down into positrons and electrons for a split second before combining together again. And when they split, quantum mechanics creates a gravitational potential between the pair of virtual particles and slows their speed. And if he is correct, it means that science has to recalculate everything from the distance from the Earth to the Sun to the distance of, you know, our distance to the other planets, galaxies. It kind of turns everything upside down and on its head. Apparently his paper is undergoing a peer review now.
So I'm going to say something, and it has nothing to do with my intelligence or the fact that I have any, you know, knowledge on this subject whatsoever. But couldn't it just be that the neutrinos traveled faster than they should have?
Well, that would mean that they traveled faster than the speed of light, which shouldn't be possible.
Well, no, wait a minute. It could be possible, though. I'm just saying.
Because it would upset physics as we know it.
Well, it upsets physics if light doesn't travel as fast either. All I'm saying is that he's taking an event and he's saying because the neutrinos got here faster than they should have compared to the optical light, therefore we assume the optical light is slower. All I'm saying is there's another possibility here, and that would be
that the neutrinos were faster.
Just throwing that out there.
Interestingly enough, so this vacuum polarization is apparently a thing that they have been able to create in lab settings. Now, I mm-hmm. don't know if they have any idea how it would possibly be created out in the real world. Talking about virtual particles, I don't know if any of our keen-eared and memoried listeners might remember, but gosh, it's probably been several months ago. We had a story on about the an engine, I can't even remember now what it was called. That NASA had just proven out that it appears to work, and they have no freaking idea why. I believe it was called like the E engine or something similar to that. And basically, it was come up with a guy that the whole scientific community called a crackpot because he had created this concept and said that in theory it would give, with electrical input only, it would give infinite thrust and had no moving parts. And everybody went, ha ha ha, you are an idiot. And then NASA built one, and I believe a Chinese group built one, and now NASA. It was just in the M drive. That's what it's called, and it was just in the news again just recently that NASA has once again confirmed that yes, it works. It might work better than they think it works, and they have no idea why. And they think it has to do with these virtual particles coming into existence and then winking out of existence. So, quantum mechanics is some weird, freaky stuff.
Sure.
And I would throw out there, Jeff, if somebody did discover that the speed of light was not the upper limit, it would not be a terrible thing for physics. It would be welcomed because it would give a whole generation of physicists all kinds of new stuff to crunch on and work on. And
I just want to throw it. All I'm saying is I'm a logical person by nature, and I see that he had a problem and he just made a vast assumption. We don't know for a fact when the neutrinos should have happened. We know the neutrinos did happen. That's how we knew that the black hole happened, right? Like how the star exploded.
Right.
So
the nova.
My point is, how the nova happened. My point is they made an assumption there on how fast the neutrinos got here. I don't know.
Just yeah, and I've not read the paper. I'm not that smart. I assume that they have seen this phenomenon in other places, and maybe that's where the assumption came from.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought it was interesting, paper is undergoing a peer review. I've got one more quickie, and I know you've got one.
I would not be one
Jeff.
Of those peers.
No. I can talk about it, but don't get me into the nitty-gritty. So just a couple weeks ago, those of you who like watching women's beating women's may have followed the Holly Holm-Ronda Rousey fight. And so some nerdy people have estimated that the kick that sent Ronda to the mat like a sack of potatoes was had generated over 50 pounds of force on the side of her head. Apparently, everybody was predicting that she was going to win the fight handily. She is undefeated as an MMA fighter, and instead, Holm just kicked her in the head and knocked her right down, and then did what any good fighter would do, and that is fall on top of her and started pummeling her in the face. It was kind of amazing. The clip was all over Facebook and social media, and so some really nerdy people have analyzed the video frame by frame and calculated the impact at 50 pounds of force, and from analyzing the video, they found that her foot was moving at an average speed of 14 miles per hour. They were able to calculate, and this is a fun term, the velocity vector of the impact using the momentum principle, which is, as everybody remembers, the net force on an object is equal to its rate of change in momentum. Everybody just rattled that off the top of their heads, right? I'm not reading from a piece of paper. They estimated the weight of Holm's foot and leg based on her total body weight and the fact that the impact lasted two video frames, which was 0.066 seconds, and the impact was 217 newtons. Or 48.7 pounds. And that is the average force. They estimate at some point the peak could have been much, much higher. So I'm just saying, you hit me in the head with a 50-pound ball, and I'm probably going to fall down too, undefeated or not. And I would like to point out that in MMA, I am undefeated. Of course, I'm never feated. I've never gotten into the ring, and nor would I.
Nor would you if you have any so, brains whatsoever.
I maintain my perfect record.
I thought it was interesting that she got beat. You know, there was a lot of talk. She's only had two fights ever, one win, one loss, that went past one round.
Well, I think as a pro, she's not had that many fights, even all total, right? Like 9 or 10 fights?
Well, no. She's had about 10 fights, but let's see.
Well, that doesn't sound like very many fights.
You get in the ring and let those people punch you in the face and see God, how many fights you're...
I would run from Chuck. I would look like Usain Bolt if I got into a ring with Chuck Liddell. I'd just be sprinting. I would be breaking all kinds of records.
She's had 13 fights.
Okay.
But of those 13 fights, 11 have ended in the first round. Most under a minute.
Yeah, that's fast.
It is fast. So, like, most of the time, she's grabbing someone and they're submissing. I mean, her big thing's an armbar, and they basically just give up because they don't want their arm broken. Not that I blame them. They shouldn't want their arm broken. That would suck really bad. Okay. No judgment. I don't want any woman coming and beating the crap out of me because they would. But, you know, the fact that the fight went into the second round was a surprise in and of itself. And, you know, the fighting style that she was going up against just didn't match up well with her. It was interesting. I'm not a huge MMA fan, but I, you know, MMA, even more so than boxing, I don't think you're ever going to find someone that goes undefeated very long because there are so many different fighting styles in MMA and they don't match up well against each other. So, you know, if you go up against someone that's a kickboxer / boxer, which is what
Holm
was.
Yeah, because she actually had a boxing career before she got into MMA.
That doesn't pair well against Rhonda's judo background. So anyway, just...
You are far more educated on this than I thought, and I am impressed. That's kind of cool.
I kind of like Ronda Rousey. Her mom is actually a professor, a math professor.
Really?
Yeah, she was a world champion judo expert. Her mother, who is a professor, I believe in Minnesota. I want to say in Minnesota. She grew up in California, but I think now her mom teaches math in Minnesota, I want to say. But anyway, just kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
Also interesting, Rhonda dropped out of high school. She had a learning disability, and she ended up getting her GED, which is a little unusual for someone whose parent is a professor.
Yeah, it's worked out well for her, though, I suppose, because she's made quite a lot of money beating people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I saw one article in researching this that apparently per second, she's made more money per second on average than Mayweather.
Well, like, there's been several of her fights that have lasted 14 seconds, yeah, Jacob, which is crazy. Like, you know, again, I just think she went up against someone whose style didn't match up real well. And it went longer than it needed to. I mean, you know, for her, she needed to be in and done.
Yeah.
That's kind of her thing. Yeah. And when that didn't happen,
she got kicked in the head.
Let's face it. I think the wise and venerable Mike Tyson said, you always have a plan until you get punched in the face.
I don't know. I would not be able to act on any, like, no, that would just be bad. I'm not going to get in a ring.
Yeah.
So tell me about this new flu vaccine, Jeff.
Well, I thought it was interesting, you know, to throw in with the science thing. They've basically admitted, I think that was the article's.
That's always what you want to see when it comes to vaccines. Uh-oh.
Yeah. So most people probably know, but if you don't know, when you go get a flu vaccine, it's not just vaccinating you against one flu strain. There are several strains that it protects you against. Mm-hmm. And it's always a guess on which strains they need to protect against. They try to pick the ones that are going to be the most, you know, most out there and do the most good. They can't protect you against everything. But one of the bad ones that they've been trying to protect you against is called the H3N2. So I think most people know H1N1. Mm-hmm. A particularly bad one here recently has been this H3N2. And what they found out is that last flu season for the 2014-2015 flu season, that they're, even though they use the virus strain in the vaccine, it was only 38% effective versus N3 H3N2, which is very, very bad okay. in the world of vaccinations. They try to be in the upper 90s. So that's
really off.
Not so good. And what they basically found is that one of the things that the H3N2 has going badly for it is that it tends to mutate rather quickly.
Okay.
Usually these mutations only happen in a victim. So they mutate once they're in your body. But what they found is that with this specific strain, it's actually mutating when they're growing the virus to be put in the vaccine.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. And they're saying that it's happening most vaccines. And if you have anyone that has an egg allergy, you probably already knew this. Most flu vaccines are grown in egg albumin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually happening in that concoction where they grow the viruses to
mutating and mm-hmm. not being the same strain that they're trying to grow the vaccine for. Interesting.
Right. So they have found a way around it, and they're hoping that it'll make it more effective by using mammalian egg cultures that are genetically man-made. So instead of using avian egg cultures, they're using mammalian egg cultures to grow the virus in.
Okay.
And they're saying that this is going to make it more effective, but there's more regulations to get passed and yada, yada, yada. So anyway, just I thought was kind of interesting. That's about the limit of what I know about it. But I just thought it was interesting because, you know, you should get vaccinated, especially if you're older, if you have diabetes, if you have, you know, any kind of health problems, if you're young, if you're around a lot of young people or old people, you should really get vaccinated because...
Yeah, the bottom line is get vaccinated.
Yeah,
really. Herd immunity and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
You know, and that's interesting because kind of looping back to that first one with science deniers, I mean, I know that there are people who swear that the flu vaccine gives you the flu, it causes all kinds of problems, and it does not do any of those things, people.
No, it does not. Not really.
But now throwing in genetically man-made mammalian egg cultures, that's just going to be just throwing gasoline on the science deniers' fire. That is great.
And let's face it, you know, 38% effective, not great, better than 0% effective, which is if you get no vaccine.
Yeah. I noticed something interesting. I do get a flu vaccine religiously every mm-hmm. year. And this year I got my vaccine, and the lady that gave it to me said that I had two choices, the standard vaccine, and they had a new, and she called it a 4-in-1. And I didn't do too much research, but even I, with my feeble math skills, know that a 4-in-1 is 3-in-1 better than a 1-in-1. And so I elected for that. And she did tell me, she cautioned me that it may make me feel bad, but please believe you don't have the flu. It's not the flu. People think it's the flu. It's not the flu. And I'm like, whatever. The flu vaccine has never fazed me in the past. And I really felt run down and mm-hmm. terrible for like 2 days, just like someone threw a switch. And then I was fine. And that's never happened to me before. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah. I still go get your flu shot.
So technically, just want to throw this out there, but inoculation, it really is giving you the flu. It's just giving you a very, very mild case of the flu, thus building up your antibodies so that if you actually get the real flu, it kicks its ass.
And I am A-okay with that. I do not want the flu in any shape or form. So I go out and get it, but just get it.
Just to point out, folks, get it because inoculation, they proved it worked in the 1800s, and that...
Oh, yeah. I watched someone go through the H1N1 about 5 years ago, and it was bad news. You do not want it. You just want to stay away.
You also don't want smallpox or...
Nope. And measles. Yeah. That was the
and
big
measles
one, right?
And mumps. You don't want those things. Get inoculated.
No, you don't.
That's... Anyway, yeah.
So talking about the miracle of modern medicine, there was a story that came out this week. The most extensive face transplant in medical history has apparently just been done, and it is amazing.
Did they take his face off?
Yeah, the really ironic thing is it was, in fact, Nicolas Cage and John Travolta. They were in a horrible accident, and they had to transplant their faces. Oh, how awesome would that headline be? there was a firefighter from Mississippi who had become disfigured during a rescue attempt, so they were able to give him a new face. He was a 41-year-old, mm-hmm. and he now has the face of a 26-year-old, which is a heck of a way to get rid of those wrinkles. But this young man apparently just died in an extreme cycling accident. That's all the article I read said, which that's pretty extreme to die in a bicycling accident.
Yes.
And anyway, so this surgery lasted 26 hours and was performed by a 150-person medical team from the New York University Langone Medical Center. The volunteer firefighter Patrick Hardison received a full scalp and face, including ears, nose, lip, and upper and lower eyelids. So apparently now he can blink and sleep with his eyes closed, which was a huge problem before, and apparently it was threatening to blind him. Who knew being able to blink would cause you to go blind?
So the
face belonged to a 26-year-old BMX enthusiast, Mr. David Rodebaugh, and he was pronounced brain dead following a tragic cycling incident. So it just so happened that he was a match, and they were ready to go. So simultaneous surgeries took place with Hardison on one side of the operating table, and Rodebaugh was on the other. And the NYU medical teams apparently had practiced this surgery for a full year to get it right. There's a quote from one of the surgeons, Dr. Rodriguez, who said, "You only have one chance to land the rover. The same goes with the face." So the team slit the skin at the back of the donor's head. They peeled each side forward with key pieces of bone attached on the chin, nose, and cheekbone, and then precisely draped it. I love this line because it's actually in the article, like Batman's cowl onto Hardison's head. That's the weirdest writing I have ever seen. Jeff is cracking up over here.
No, I'm not cracking up. I'm trying not to throw up. This, honestly, dude, this is not for me. I did not become a doctor for a very specific reason, and my feet right now feel so weird. Like it is crawling, making my skin crawl just hearing you talk about this. I bless those doctors. Bless the fact that this guy got a new face. Let's be done talking about it. I'm just,
I will put out there that the surgery cost $1 million and apparently was paid for by NYU. And it was deemed a success after Hardison was taken shopping at Macy's and no one in the store paused to give him a second look. Rodebaugh's mother, who gave permission for the transplant, was shown photos of Hardison after the surgery, telling the medical team that Patrick is beautiful. So I will put a picture on the show notes if you want to see it. It is remarkable. I mean, clearly you can tell in the after something is not right. But when you see the before and you realize that we were able to do this, it is just unbelievable. So, yes, I get it. I am not good with blood and all of that stuff either. Not maybe quite as squeamish, apparently, as Sissy Boy Jeff over here. But
yeah,
it is absolutely amazing that we can do this.
God bless the people that can, because if it were up to me, the dude would not look any different than he did 2 months ago, because no.
Yeah, I feel like there's a reason you work on computers and not people's faces.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I just heard a hand surgeon who was talking about how they pioneered liver transplantation and how nowadays, I mean, it's not routine in the sense that they're transplanting an organ, but it's pretty routine in the sense that liver transplants happen all the time and they're no big deal. But when it was being pioneered, he said that it would take upwards of 1,000 units of blood for one patient, and that it was pioneered in the city of Pittsburgh that they would have to shut down elective surgeries across the city for weeks because all of the blood would be consumed on one person to do these transplants.
Oh, wow.
And apparently they had to roll up and tuck sheets under the doors of the operating theater because otherwise the blood would come out and just coat the hallway. They had to lay down sheets and blankets in the operating theater because of the amount of blood that they were just running through.
Did and I not just?
I know. I
did
know.
Did I not that's just it, explain how I didn't want this anymore?
But apparently, now you just go in, you go zip, zap, zoop, and you come out, and you got a new liver, which is just amazing.
That is amazing, and we're done.
And we're done. No, okay. I don't think we have any more bodily fluid stuff.
Let's talk. Let's talk about. I want to make sure we get a chance to talk about fission and fusion.
Absolutely.
Because it's very confusing to some people. Maybe none of our listeners, but sorry, you're still going to hear about it.
Okay. So go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. So, nuclear fission is, I'm going to use the air quotes here, easy, right? So nuclear fission, right, is when you take two molecules and you bash them into each other, right?
Yeah, you're basically knocking them together to spin off some protons and energy.
Right. And so that's what's been around for a long time. That's what causes like bombs and Hiroshima, and they control that and they use it to boil water, right?
Basically, yeah. I mean, so the whole idea is it all comes down to Albert Einstein's famous E equals MC squared, which
right.
I bet a lot of our listeners know what it is. But for the few of you who may not, it is an equation that says that energy is equal to the mass of an object times multiplied by the constant, which is the speed of light, squared. So a little tiny bit of mass can, when converted into energy, because mass and energy are interchangeable, it can produce a huge amount of energy. So,
right.
You know, the example of one of the articles I read gave, which I thought was good, is so with fission, if you suppose that you had $2 million, clearly hypothetical, I don't have $2 million, please go on Patreon, give us $2 million.
Right.
And you wanted to split that money into two separate bank accounts, and you did that, and then you looked at your bank accounts, and each account had $999,999. You were missing $2. Mm-hmm. But in that exchange, those $2 got turned into energy. You would have a whole lot of energy,
right.
And you're probably going to be okay with that. And that's what's happening in nuclear fission. Basically, you are taking three things: electrons, protons, and neutrons. And you are figuring out how to strip off some of the electrons and neutrons and get energy. And basically, that energy is going to raise the temperature of water to boil the water, create steam, and run a turbine generator. And
right,
that's all a nuclear power plant is. It's basically a big steam engine.
Right.
It's just using fission
It really isn't the nuclear energy that creates the electricity. It just creates a lot of heat,
yep.
Which in turn turns water into steam, which turns these great big turbines and makes electric energy.
Yep, it's exactly right. The same way hydroelectric works. It's water falling, and it's spinning a blade, which turns a turbine, which makes electricity. And as you may remember back from your days of chemistry class, the number of protons in a nucleus tells you what the element is. Nitrogen has 7 protons. Silver has 47 protons. And the atomic number, the atomic mass number, tells you how many protons plus how many neutrons there are. So uranium-235 has 92 protons because it's uranium, and 143 neutrons. Neutrons, because 235 minus 92, 143. So
yep.
Math. I did not do that in my head. That is all written down, folks, in case you're playing at home. So the interesting thing is you can break that uranium-235 into different things, and you'll get different elements. So if you break uranium-235, you get krypton-92 and barium-141 plus two extra neutrons. And those two extra neutrons, when you're converting them into energy, like I said, because of E equals MC squared, converts into a huge amount of energy.
Right.
So that's like what we said. You heat up water and you make steam and you turn a generator. So
right.
Fusion is basically the exact opposite. It's a process that takes light elements. So fission takes heavy elements, breaks them apart, makes lighter elements and energy. Fusion takes light elements, smashes them together under immense pressures, and fuses them into heavier elements.
Right.
That's the process that powers our sun and all of the stars. Basically, in our sun, two atoms of hydrogen combine together to form an atom of helium. And in the process, some of the mass of the hydrogen gets converted into energy. And again, because of E equals MC squared, a little tiny bit of mass turns into a huge amount of energy. And I know we talked a few weeks ago about the book. The boy who played, I can't even think of the name of the book now. What was the name of the book? It was by Tom Clynes, Clynes. Go check it out. It was two episodes back. Great book. And it is about a 14-year-old Taylor Wilson who actually achieved fusion, which is not an easy thing to do. So with fusion, you take two low mass elements, and when you fuse them together, you create basically new elements that have more mass than what you started with. Basically, you need a lot of energy and a lot of heat to do this. And when I say a lot of heat, I'm talking 100 million degrees Celsius, which is 180 million degrees Fahrenheit.
Pretty hot.
Yeah, very hot. That's hotter than the sun, actually. Yeah. The sun gets a huge gravity assist. It's gravity doing all the mm-hmm. work in the sun. Mm-hmm. Here on you know, puny old planet Earth, you just need a really, really hot environment. You basically start ionizing the deuterium, which is a heavy hydrogen. It's hydrogen with an extra proton, I believe, if I remember correctly. And you form a plasma.
Right.
And then you basically start bombarding it with there's all kinds of different things you can bombard it with alpha particles. You can bombard it with X-rays. You can bombard it with, I think, neutrinos, if I remember that book correctly. But you basically start doing that and hold everything in a incredibly strong magnetic field. And if you are lucky, fusion will occur and you will start making heavier elements and getting out energy.
Right.
So fusion sounds really simple, but the details are really difficult and exacting. I mean, you've got to heat and compress and confine hydrogen to a plasma at 100 million degrees. That's a hard challenge. Like, it's not easy to do. It's why there's only been like 23, 24 people who have done it. It's just not an easy, you know, engineering project. You're not going to do it in your backyard. There's all kinds of problems, and it's kind of the holy grail, because if we can develop a process that fuses and we can do it that generates even a tiny, tiny bit more energy than it consumes, we have solved like a huge problem that we are faced with, which is how do we make clean, because it doesn't produce radioactive material like right. Like fission does. Well, fission takes radioactive material and makes other radioactive material, but with fusion, not really. I mean, deuterium and tritium, is they're slightly radioactive, but they're clean compared to just about right. everything else that we do. So, you know, the goal is to create a safe, clean, and pretty much inexhaustible energy supply.
Yeah, I mean, even just 1 or 2% more energy than it takes is a huge win. I mean, it's basically free energy.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I saw this article. I thought this was interesting because I had read that there had been some breakthroughs in fusion, mm-hmm. but I didn't know specifically what those breakthroughs were. So just February of last year, in February 2014, scientists from the Nuclear Ignition Facility at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory in California published a paper in the journal Nature, and they documented a series of new experiments that has produced more energy than was contained within the fuel that was put into the system. So I think that is a key point. It didn't produce more energy or equal amounts of energy to the total electrical input into the system, but basically they put a pound of fuel in and got more than a pound of energy out of the system.
Okay.
Which is, don't get me wrong, that is huge, as Donald Trump would say. So the experiments also show the beginnings of a process that they believe could lead to a self-sustaining reaction, which that is game over. Once they have self-sustaining fusion, you just keep throwing fuel into it and getting energy out of it. So in the current set of experiments, they fired 192 laser beams at a gold canister called a, and I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, so physicists out there, don't get too mad at me. I believe it is called a holarum, if I'm reading that word correctly. H-O-H-L-R-A-U-M. And what it is a minuscule coating of fuel made of deuterium and tritium, which is one additional proton on helium. So deuterium is helium 3, tritium is helium 4, I believe, or maybe it's 2 and 3. They're both kinds of helium. And then when the lasers hit that holarum, the gold released an X-ray that vaporized the metal and then compresses the fuel coating by a huge factor. They said a factor of 35. And I don't remember, the article said something like it would be the equivalent of taking something, a sphere the size of a basketball, and compressing it to like a pea. So a huge amount of compression. The fuel reaches a density 2 to 3 times greater than those at the sun's core. And they just do this inside of a laboratory out in California. You know, maybe create a black hole, swallow us all.
Yeah.
That massive compression overcomes the natural repulsive force and causes fusion among the hydrogen atoms. So these new experiments have surpassed the break-even goal, which is that it produces more energy than the amount of fuel put into the system would produce if you could somehow turn it all instantaneously into energy. There is still a long way to go before, you know, fusion becomes at all feasible. I mean, it is still in the realm of research. The fuel itself produced more energy, but the story said that the entire process required roughly 100 times more energy to power the lasers than was generated by the reaction. So it's theoretical, but, you know, some new models show that they could potentially have a shot at achieving self-sustaining ignition by tweaking the process a little bit. You know, like Jeff said, there is a huge upside to fusion because it is, you know, clean for all intents and purposes. Fission is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we have that, you know, we don't want it in our backyards. Nobody wants a nuclear reaction. It's dirty. But there are new designs that are, I'm going to say the word incredibly safe, but they are incredibly safe. I mean, there is nothing that is completely safe, but most people don't know this, but coal burning plants produce radiation. Did you know that? Yes, burning coal releases radiation into the atmosphere, and sure, that's radiation that you breathe in and get into your lungs and does all kinds of nasty things to your body. There is a risk no matter what we use, but you know, I wish that we would look at fission more until fusion becomes possible. And you've got some information about some stuff I didn't even read, Jeff, on fusion.
Well, okay, so let's talk a little bit about fusion. So obviously fission is way more dangerous than fusion just because of the byproducts, right?
Right.
And we get that. In fission, it's a lot harder to find plutonium and uranium laying around than...
Well, you can't find it laying around. That's the thing. You have to make it.
Yeah. So that's some really bad things about fission. But I do want to point out that fusion isn't exactly just like happy camper, let's just go make this in our backyard either.
Okay, no.
Because when you're talking about fusion, you're basically talking about a ring of plasma that is heated at 100 million degrees Celsius. Now,
that's going to leave a burn, I'm just saying.
Yeah, if that gets loose, that's a really bad thing. So let's talk a little bit about what they do to make sure it doesn't get loose. The current main way that they do this is used in what's called the... Oh boy, here we go. Tokamak-based reactor. Mm-hmm. And the tokamak-based reactor uses electromagnets and electricity to create basically a loop of plasma that goes back in on itself. And it uses that electricity. Now, if they're running that at full power and the electricity goes off, you have 100 million degree plasma shooting off in direction over there.
Yep. It just lets it go.
Yeah. And that's bad. Okay. That's going to ruin some people's day. Mostly close nearby, and it's not going to create fallout. So there's still positives there, but it's still not going to be a good day for people.
You don't want to live next to that. Oh, and fun trivia fact, tokamak is actually an acronym. Most people don't know that. It's from a Russian word, but it translates into toroidal chamber with magnetic coils.
Okay, well, there you go.
And I cannot say it in Russian.
No. So they came up with a new design in, where else? Germany. It's called the Windelstein. I like saying that. Windelstein 7X.
So we have ways of making you talk, plasma.
And if you exactly, and if you Google the Windelstein 7X, it looks really, really like something scary out of an alien movie.
Like things that look horrifying. Oh wow, it looks like the aliens are going to come right at me.
Yeah. So it's the first large reactor that is based on, instead of being electrically manipulated, it still has electromagnetic magnets in it, don't get me wrong, but the shape and the construction of the electromagnets is such that if the electromagnets were to fail, it wouldn't just go shooting off in a direction.
Really?
It creates a cooler-shaped ring of magnets that will contain the plasma gases no matter what.
Huh. Yeah, it almost has like a sinusoidal shape to it. So it's a ring, but it almost looks like a sine wave circled into a ring.
That is correct.
Interesting.
It took them 1.1 million hours to construct it.
And that's just one guy, so he was busy for a long time.
It's 16 meters across, and I just want to...
Not very big.
It's not really all that big, but the magnets, to keep the plasma, the 100 million degrees centigrade...
Yeah.
Plasma, they're cooled to negative 270 degrees Celsius.
That's almost absolute zero, right? What's that, like 273?
Yeah. So you have basically this ring at 16 meters across, right? That gets down to basically absolute zero. And then within that...
Yeah, just 3 degrees above absolute zero.
Yeah. And then within that, you have 100 million degrees Celsius plasma. They're only a meter away from each other.
Wow.
Which I just thought was really cool. I just like, that is... Anyway.
There's some seriously smart people out there.
Yes, there are. So anyway, this new design is slated to go online in like 3 days.
Oh, wow.
So let's keep our fingers crossed. But the biggest thing is that this new design, what they're saying is that, you know, nuclear fusion as it exists in the tokamak model is not safe, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. What this model, if it works, will do is take the safety factor out of it. So they could put it in your backyard and it wouldn't kill you, in theory.
Except that we still have to pump in a lot more energy than we get out.
Again, there's still, I'm not saying there aren't hurdles to overcome. What I'm saying is the hurdle of safety, this could solve that. I mean, there's layers of things that you have to fix, right?
Yes.
The needing the fuel constraints, the amount of energy constraints, those are still two big ones that have not been overcome. But this could get us one step closer in that if this new design works, it takes the safety factor out of the equation, which isn't a bad thing.
That's amazing. And yeah. So I was just looking at the Wintersteen 7X, and so this is crazy. So they're planning this test, and the whole thing is designed to operate for 30 minutes. That's it. It operates for 30 minutes and then just consumes itself, they're like, that was successful.
Yeah, they took 1.1 million hours and they're looking for a half an hour.
Which that's crazy. I mean, that is crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently it is a 3 Tesla magnetic field, which is just honking a huge magnetic field.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
I just thought that, I mean, you know, fusion is really cool. You know, maybe someday, right?
Yes. The other article that I was reading that was looking at what the scientists at Lawrence Livermore have come up with, they think that that we could see some significant breakthroughs by 2020 to 2030. It didn't dare postulate that we could see any sort of net positive, production of energy, but just that they could potentially create a self-sustaining fusion reaction, which, you know, once you have a system that, yes, it might take a huge amount of energy to start it up, but once you've sort of jump started it, you can just keep shoveling fuel into it and getting energy out of it, then
right.
that is huge. And
yep.
You know, so the first time that they can create a self-sustaining reaction, I mean, that's pretty close to game over.
Yep.
I'm sure that's still probably in like layman speak 20 years away from game over, but I mean, that's a huge, huge breakthrough. That's really cool.
Yeah, I thought amazing. It was really cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I know we've been talking for quite a while.
I wanted to do one more.
I do, because yeah. I saw this one and I thought, you know, what a great making lemonade out of lemons story.
Okay.
So a satellite mishap is letting physicists test Einstein's theory of relativity at a level of precision that has never been tested before.
How are they doing that since we don't know what the speed of light is anymore?
Oh, I'm going to smack you with a fish.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying, we just talked earlier about how they may be off on the speed of light. How can you test?
Maybe off, but until there is more empirical evidence that we are, I think that they are assuming 186,000 miles per second.
I'm always the Debbie Downer. Sorry. Okay, go for it.
This is why we can't have nice things, because you're back over there in the corner. How do you know for sure? So the European Space Agency has embraced Murphy, just embraced him in a big old bear hug. They had two satellites that were launched that were supposed to become part of the European Space Agency's operated GPS system. And those pesky Russians accidentally put them in an elliptical orbit and not a circular orbit. Oopsie.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a faulty launch, and it left them unfit to perform their duties as part of a global GPS system, basically.
Okay, so now I'm not going to get to know where I'm going in the right place. Man, well, these Russians, I don't know. This is all a plot.
Yeah, it's not going to affect you and your consumer GPS. But yeah, it was a huge waste of money and resources. But then the physicist said, well, you know what? This is interesting because they're in this odd elliptical orbit, and we might be able to test the theory of relativity, which is that clocks run more slowly when they're close to heavy objects because of how gravity warps the fabric of space-time. And that's kind of a simplification, but that's basically the bottom line. Time changes depending on the strength of the gravity that you're nearby. There's other things that can affect it, but that's the gist of it. So as the two satellites swing toward and away from Earth in the oblong orbit, the physicists are going to track the speeding and slowing of time using their onboard atomic clocks. Apparently, they are just uber accurate atomic clocks that they put on these things, because you need uber accurate clocks to do all of the GPS triangulation. You are exactly here magic. And I thought this was really interesting. So far, our best measurements of time dilation of that effect were made in 1976, which it's hard to believe that we haven't gone back in 39 years to reevaluate it. And that experiment only lasted for 2 hours. And from that, we go 186,000 miles per second and some change. That is the speed. So these satellites are going to be tracked for a year, and they are going to enable physicists to make measurements that are up to 4 times more accurate. So by this time next year, we should have a much better idea of exactly how much gravity causes time to dilate. The article I read went on to say, the impromptu experiment is a great reminder that in science, a failure can often be turned into an opportunity. And in that space, one should never, ever waste anything. So basically a huge screw up. Oopsie. It's billions of dollars of satellites. Sorry. And well, maybe now we can actually find with even more precision exactly how fast the speed of light is. And whether that is in fact the limit or not, I think is still up for debate, as Jeff has attested to. But yeah, so that's kind of interesting. And I did find this bonus fun fact, which I thought was amazing. In 1971, two researchers, Joseph Halfley and Richard Keating, loaded cesium clocks onto airliners and flew them around the world. And they were able to observe the time dilation effect predicted by general relativity due to both gravity and the speed of the aircraft relative to the Earth's surface. So when you think about it, Einstein never saw any of this proved out. He had ideas. He thought it up inside of his big white-haired noggin, and they have just proven it time and time and time again that it seems to be exactly as he predicted, and I can't even begin to imagine that. It's kind of like when they found the Higgs boson a year and a half ago, and it pretty much exactly matched the mathematical model that was come up with, what, back in the 60s, I think it was? And there was no thought at the time that it would ever be, you know, testable. And it pretty much not only was testable, but it pretty much exactly matched. In 1964 was when it was theorized. And so how do those people do it? How do they have that brain? I want to open their head and eat their brain and get their special powers. That's what I'm saying. It works that way, right? if I conquer my victim and eat his brain, I gain his powers.
Was that in Heroes?
Something like that.
I think that seems like that was in the TV show Heroes.
I don't know what it was in, but I want to be able to sit down and think up stuff that smart.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
I don't blame you.
not at all. Okay, well, we could talk about more, but I think we've talked long enough. That's a bunch of science stuff. Is there anything absolutely we're missing, Jeff, or are you happy?
I'm pretty happy. I think we can probably
let these wrap people it up. Get back to their fine day.
Yeah.
Because it's Thanksgiving week. You got turkey to eat and stuffing, and you're going to get all that tryptophan.
I had forgotten all about that. We probably should have said what we were thankful about, but, you know, we suck.
I'm thankful for science.
Yeah, well, that's actually a good point.
I am thankful, for the miracle of modern medicine. Okay, I will give you a thankful one, because this is kind of neat. As regular listeners know, a few months ago, I had bariatric surgery. I talked about it on the podcast, and as part of the testing to get ready for that, I discovered that I was diabetic, and not just a little diabetic, but like really bad diabetic. Like, I went in feeling fine, not thinking a thing was wrong, and they said, oh, hey, Mr. Cazell, your blood sugar is 3.49 and your A1C was almost 14. It was 13.9%, which apparently according to Jeff, that is just bonkers bad. Like,
they could have made like slushies with your blood.
Yeah.
And people would have been like, that tastes good.
When I went to my doctor, he said that he starts looking at hospitalizing people for like forced sugar control at around 400 to 450. Yeah. And I had no idea. I wasn't exhibiting any of the symptoms or none of that stuff. So I did work hard and I got my A1C down. I was able to have the surgery. I've had the surgery. It's been a couple of months now. And I went back in and had it retested the other day. And I've not been on any medicine or anything like that. And my A1C is now 5.4%, which is completely normal.
Yeah,
and so the miracle of modern medicine has, in effect, completely reversed diabetes in me. And all I had to do was have them cut me open and completely redo my plumbing and make it so that I cannot eat more than like a teeny tiny thimble of food at a time. So, you know, small price to pay, but I am thankful for that. It is amazing. So, you know, thank you, science and doctors and all of that fun stuff.
I don't know
if you're thankful for anything, Jeff, but I will throw that one.
I'm thankful that I don't know.
Put me on the spot like that, I'm gonna call you out, brother.
I just hope that I can make it through Thanksgiving without being stupid with what I eat. I've been doing a really good job without surgery at losing weight.
That's awesome.
And I am down now more than 10% of my body weight in a little over 3 months. And I'm really happy about that. I probably weighed less than I have in, I don't know, probably 7, 8, 9 years, maybe.
Congratulations, man. That is hard to do.
It's not easy, but hopefully I can make it through Thanksgiving and not be stupid.
Just eat extra turkey and avoid the dressing.
Yeah, I think, but is the key. I really want some dressing, so yeah, I'm going to have a little bit. But like I said, hopefully I can be smart and not go overboard. So,
dang,
yeah.
Dressing, why you got to be so good? Because I'm not allowed to have dressing either. I'm not supposed to eat bread and carbs and all of the stuff that actually is good.
Yeah.
Eat all the turkey I want. Thanks, medicine.
But yeah, I'm doing good so far, and I hope to keep doing good. We'll see.
Very cool. Well, so if that's not enough for me to love, let me talk about what I love, because what is this show without some useless gadget that will probably only marginally improve your life, but by golly, it is fun to have gadgets.
I like gadgets.
So when I got my new iPhone a few months ago, I have an older car, and I say that with air quotes because, unlike Jeff, I don't buy new cars every 4.5 seconds. I've got a 2012 model. Which,
oh, yeah, I meant to say. No, just kidding.
Which, apparently in the world of electronics, I mean, just throw it away. It is a grandfather. So my new iPhone, it doesn't play well all the time with the car system. Like, sometimes it works fine, and other times it's not working at all. So I found this little Wi-Fi audio receiver for $20. It is called the Sobrent Wi-Fi audio receiver, right in the name. It's $20 on Amazon. I'm sure you could find it other places, maybe, because it looks like it's something out of China with instructions that are barely readable in English. But it has support for AirPlay and DLNA built into it. And it sounds loads better than Bluetooth streaming. I had a little Bluetooth thing that I tried, and it just sounded like crap. So I got the Sobrent and put it in. It works like a champ right out of the box with iOS devices. It works with Android as long as you have a music app that supports either AirPlay or DLNA streaming. I haven't tried it on Android, so I can't speak specifically to it, but reviews mention that it works okay. The only caveat is you've got to have that app that does it. Like I said, it's only $20. It comes on just like a champ. You can set it up and still stream your music to it, and it gives you a Wi-Fi hotspot in your car, but you can also still access the internet. It sounds great. The only thing it doesn't do is let me control the iPhone through the controls on the car. So I do like when my iPhone decides to play nice with my car, but it's like 50-50. It's kind of like it gets cranky and doesn't want to. And when it doesn't want to, this little gizmo works great. So if you're having connectivity issues, I would certainly recommend it if you've got an iPhone. No question. Maybe if you've got an Android, but it's $20. You can't really go too wrong. It's not going to kill you if it doesn't work. And Amazon's got a pretty good return policy. So I like it. I would recommend checking it out. It is a cool little gadget. That is what I love. Jeff, how about you?
Okay, so I'm changing it up right at the last minute. I yanked my one that I had in there, and I put a new one in because I just remembered that I want to tell people, go out right now. If you don't have Netflix, subscribe to Netflix, because you should subscribe to Netflix, let's face it, and go watch Jessica Jones.
I don't know anything about it. I've seen several people mention it, and I am completely clueless.
Okay, so this is the second in the line of Marvel series that Netflix is doing as original programming. They did Daredevil first, which also amazeballs.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was one of the things that I loved. Jessica Jones might just be better.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because Daredevil was freaking amazing.
And I really do think that this may be better.
So for losers who do not know, who is Jessica Jones?
Okay, so Jessica Jones is a superhero. The backstory, let me give you comic book backstory just a little bit. Jessica Jones was a character that came out. In theory, she was a superhero named Jewel.
Okay.
Who ended up giving up being a superhero for some reasons that I don't want to go into because that would spoil the television show. But she basically has super strength. She got her powers in a car crash and some radioactive material. She was actually a classmate to Peter Parker.
Oh, okay.
She had a crush on Peter Parker. She ends up becoming a private investigator and, spoiler alert, it's kind of pretty well known. If you know anything about comic books, she ends up marrying Luke Cage, who is also a superhero who, there is going to be the next Netflix, series. And he actually appears in this show as well. So they're going to go from this show into the Luke Cage show that will also, I'm sure, have Jessica Jones in it. They end up becoming an item and get married eventually, at least if the television show follows the comic books, that's what happens.
Okay.
So anyway, Jessica Jones comes out Netflix. I think it came out on Thursday evening. I'm already to episode 7 in about a day and a half. It stars Kristen Ritter.
I like her.
She had that Don't Be a Bee. She was on.
Yeah, Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. Whatever. I like that show.
Yeah, and then she was on Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
She played Jesse's girlfriend, who was an addict. Also in the show, the man who plays Luke Cage, his name is Mike Coulter, a large black gentleman who happened to be on a show that I like a lot called A Good Wife. He played a drug lord in that show. So if you've watched A Good Wife in,
I know who he is. Yeah. I just Googled him. I don't know what I've seen him in, but I've seen him
in lots
of stuff.
He's been on several things.
Also, he was in that Las Vegas show on NBC.
You're right.
I think.
Yeah. Also in the show, Carrie Ann Moss, has a pretty big part in the show, from Matrix fame, much older now, but still fairly attractive, woman. David Tennant, from Doctor Who is actually the bad guy. He's the Purple Man, AKA Kill Grave, pretty awesome bad guy who also, by the way, was originally a Daredevil bad guy. So I think the whole idea behind the Marvel thing on Netflix, they're releasing 4 shows. Daredevil already out, this Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and then the Iron Fist is the 4th one. They end up becoming a superhero group. I think they'll end up doing something like that. But anyway, it's really well done. It's like Daredevil, very dark. The heroine, as it will, has her flaws, like being a raging alcoholic, amongst other things. It's actually, it's a really, really good show. I highly recommend it. Well acted. David Tennant is amazing as a bad guy. Not the first time he's been a bad guy, but, definitely good, in that role. There's a couple other people, Rachel Taylor. She's been in several things as well. I had to look her up because I couldn't remember what I'd seen her in. But once I looked her up, I was like, oh yeah, I remember. She plays, Jessica Jones, really good friend. She was in the Transformers movie. She was in, Charlie's Angels TV series there for a little while. She was in Grey's Anatomy for a little over a season. Anyway, really good. Really well acted, a lot of action. It's superheroes, which, I'm a big fan of, especially since, what I love about what Marvel has done on these Netflix series. I mean, Marvel in the theater is pretty clean cut, yay, raw, Captain America, let's salute, everybody love it, even in Iron Man, who in reality is a very flawed hero. In the comic books, they've really cleaned him up to where he's not the raging alcoholic and wife beater that he is in the comic books. So it's kind of nice to see them doing something a little less mainstream, if you will.
Yeah, Daredevil was really, really dark.
Yeah. Well, so is this. And there's a lot of sex and violence and alcohol and yeah.
So I'm adding it to my queue.
It's really good. I highly recommend it. Not to be watched with children.
Yeah.
Again, this is not PG. This is not PG-13. This is a pretty hard R. Okay. But really well done and worth watching.
Very cool.
For
yeah.
Adults in our listening audience. If you're not an adult, wait till you are and then watch it.
Like I said, I've seen a few people mention it on social media, but I didn't know anything about it. I'm Jessica Jones. What's that? That's cool. Because I kind of feel like I need a new series or something.
I tell you what, I think you'll really enjoy this one. I would be shocked if you don't. It's really well done.
Oh, the wife and I really like Daredevil. So if it's kind of in that vein, I feel like we're going to be in for this one too.
There's just some great stuff. Cause I don't, did you know who Luke Cage is? Do you know who he is?
I know who, I know the name, yes, at a very high level, but don't ask me any specific questions about him.
There's this really funny moment, and this isn't really ruining anything for anybody, but there's this really funny moment where she finds out that there's some bad guys going to basically beat up, I'm going to use air quotes, beat up Luke Cage. And she's like all worried because she doesn't know about Luke Cage. And I'm just like, oh, this is going to be a bad day for those guys. And it was. So anyway,
really cool
stuff. So yeah, go check that out.
Awesome. I will.
Okay. Well, you have listened to another fine episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. I want to take a moment to thank our patrons, Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, John, Kai, Todd, Carl. Thank you very much for helping us bring new and fun things. We're going to have some big announcements coming probably at the first of the year on what some of the patronage is going to go towards. So keep in tune for that. I also want to thank Geek News Central for bringing us into the fold. We talked about that at the beginning of the show, but I just want to reiterate, we're happy to be on board. Go over and check those other shows out. If you want to give us a call and rant, rave, give us some suggestions, we would be glad to hear those. Our call-in number is, as always, 317-643-1212. You can call and leave a message for us to listen to. You will not have to talk to real people. You will talk to a machine like God intended. You can always follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/nobettershow. You can tweet us at No Better Show. I am at Jeff_Cheney. You can tweet Jacob at Not The Real Jacob. We always love hearing from our fans. And if, last but not least, if you do enjoy the show, please tell your friends and take just a moment to go over to iTunes, even if you hate iTunes with a passion, as you probably should. We would appreciate going over, give us a rating, a review. A few stars goes a long way to helping us get on the list of popular podcasts so that other people can find us and suffer along with you.
Don't be the only ones, people.
That's right. So thanks again. And now that you've listened to today's show, you should know better than average too.
Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you much.